Welcome to the 167 podcast, a podcast to inspire, challenge, and encourage you. Our goal is to help you live into the 167 hours of your week away from church. And now your host, Shannon Patterson.
Well, hey, Porch Community, and welcome to episode 186. I'm here with Josh. I'm Shannon. We're ready for today's episode. What's up, Josh?
I don't even know how to respond to that. Hey, Shannon, what's going on?
Oh, new, but different and same. And
same.
Yeah. Not much. Here we are.
Yeah.
Here we are. Yeah. It's that time of year when the culminate. I saw a reel or something yesterday. I don't know what you call them anymore. Meme, reel, whatever.
Depends on where you're at.
I know.
A meme is a
didn't we already discuss this?
Is a still image.
Okay.
Anyone that tells you different is wrong.
Okay. So I can't. Anyway, I saw a thing.
Yeah.
On a thing, and it said, "Can someone please move Mother's Day to another month? Because there's nothing more I'd rather do than try to be honored on a day in May when I also have recitals." And graduations and end of school parties and gifts for teachers. And it, like, it was this like super long list.
Yeah.
That's not really me. It just made me think of this time of year and stuff like that. So
this time of year is exhausting.
It really is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, evidenced by my like 10 minutes of announcements on Sunday. But it's just a, it's stuff that's coming that's not even in May, really, except for Grad Sunday.
I mean, it's really one of those things. Is there's so much going on that goes over that 50% rule that we have.
Yes. What is that 50% rule?
So
I mean, I know, but
to make it into a announcement that plays on Sunday morning, whether it's live or recorded,
mm-hmm.
it has to be applicable to 51% of the audience sitting in the room or mm-hmm. online.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it doesn't make it. It doesn't make the cut.
So, like, if it's kids stuff, you're going, okay, this is for their parents, maybe their grandparents and kids, volunteers with kids. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I will tell you, there's something that I absolutely love among many, many, many things about being here at the Porch Community Church.
What's that?
And it is, I don't have someone wandering over from another service in a three-piece suit who is not a very good public speaker, with maybe a legal pad in their hand, saying that they were sent over to give an announcement to the congregation and giving me 1 minute's notice for them to do so. That happened a lot.
It did.
Okay, maybe not the three-piece suit part. Maybe it's just a two-piece suit. But anyway, suit or no suit.
Someone's face, like... went straight into my head. I'm not going to put them on blast because they're a nice guy.
I don't even know who you're talking about. So, but don't say it. But I just know that I would get hit with that. So I'm like, hey, I've been told to come over and give this announcement, and it's like, oh, this is going to go over like gangbusters. So anyway, we're talking about announcements, but yeah, we had a lot of announcements on Sunday because we have a lot going on, and we're not going to exhaust our folks on this episode with that, but, you know,
nope.
Make sure you read the Porch, the community news.
Make sure you're on social.
Following us on Facebook. If you're not following, if you haven't liked or joined, I don't know,
Porch
again,
Hub.
The Porch Hub on Facebook, that's a really good kind of inner, like, it's not like, oh, no, someone can't be a part of it, but it's stuff that... Again, kind of go into that 50% rule. It's not necessarily a designed, you know, fitting into your programmed for the week announcements mm-hmm. or inspiration, but it's something for people to know. Like, I saw that City of Valdosta is doing like a cleanup day this Saturday. Well, some of us are going to be working on the playground this Saturday because mm-hmm. it got rained out last week.
Yep.
And so I know that some of us are doing that, but I thought, well, you know, this is something cool to let our people know.
Mm-hmm.
Here's something in the community you could do.
But we wouldn't share that on a Sunday, or
correct.
I wouldn't make a post about it.
Right. So here it is. But here's
an
opportunity.
And if you have something starting and it is for a particular demographic, that is the place to share it.
Mm-hmm.
And then y'all can have discussions about it right then and there.
Right then and there. So one thing I want to say before we jump into today's conversation, because it goes in line with with what I'm about to say. Makes sense. Last week I said, hey, I made a post, a personal post, and I said, hit me up with some ideas, topics for a podcast conversation. And I got back some great suggestions from people and some encouragement on some stuff we've done. And so I've got a really long list. One that didn't come to me, but it came to you, was what we're talking about today, because it's the most timely.
It's timely, and a couple weeks from now, it no one cares.
And on, well, I will say this, before you name the topic, I thought about it, but I thought, I don't know if anyone even wants to talk about this anymore, so I just kind of moved on. But you brought it up, so what is our topic today?
General Conference 2020 finally happened.
In 2020?
Four.
So the United Methodist General Conference finally happened last week. It concluded on the third, May 3rd, and it was a 2 week.
It was the Friday after.
Yeah, so May 3rd.
Last Friday.
Yeah, so it was a 2 week conference in North Carolina, Charlotte, and it was postponed from 2020.
Yeah.
So we were. Anyway, if you. I will say, I'll go ahead and tell you this now.
It's the end of the UMC as we know it.
And I feel fine. So, but way back, so when we were in the process of leaving the United Methodist Church and really starting to understand what all was going on, well beyond Valdosta and the South Georgia Conference that we were a part of, and even this part, the region of the country, we talked about it a lot. If that even remotely interests you, then you can go back to episodes 62 through 66 specifically. There's a few other times we mentioned it, but
those were dedicated. Very
intentional there, talking about where we were. So we've left the United Methodist Church. We disaffiliated in 2022 and in June at the annual conference. And so we have been out now for almost 2 years. It feels like longer, honestly.
Yep.
Because I think we started the conversation and we had already done our voting and the things we had to do internally as a congregation in order to meet some
deadlines
in order to be voted in June. So we were, you know.
I think we were done before 20, as a church aspect of it, right at the beginning of 2022.
Yeah. I was done even well before that.
You know what I mean.
No. Officially. I know what you mean, and you know what I mean. I was done. So anyway, we're not a part of the UMC anymore, but it was mentioned to Josh, hey, well, I don't know. You don't say who, but what was the question? Well,
why don't y'all give us some perspective on what everything that kind of shook out at General Conference?
Yep.
That way we kind of know that we made the right decision, basically.
Well, okay, so if
like
you're,
that's where the conversation ultimately went.
If you're in a hurry and you've got stuff to do, I'm going to just cut to the chase. We made the right decision.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, if you've got a little bit of time and you want to hang with us. So first, I'll just define for those who are going, what's General Conference? General Conference of the United Methodist Church is their main governing body. They are at that conference. It's the only time that any kind of changes can be made to the Book of Discipline, which is their governing document, and how in which they carry out the function of their denomination. And so General Conference is where that happens. One of the reasons it was so anticipated is because, like you said, it was supposed to happen in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
COVID happened, understandably. It's not just a U.S. thing. People come from all over the world.
So they pushed
And so they pushed it to 2022. And then...
Should have happened then.
Should have happened then, but they claimed COVID again.
Yep.
They claimed that technology was not available for delegates who could not get visas to come to the United States, that it was going to be too much.
I call bullcrap.
Yes.
I think I did then.
Yes, you did. So they pushed it to 2024. So they had it 2 weeks, April 23rd through May 3rd, up there in Charlotte.
And it's funny because, yes, it's 4 years different.
Yeah.
But what happened in 2024 was completely different with what would have happened in 2020.
Without a doubt. And that's...
And it's also funny because there would have been people from Valdosta at the 2021 Because I think
2020.
Yeah. Because Jimmy would have been there.
Yeah, there were several people that I know who have now left the UMC. Who most of them are Global Methodists. I know some from the Foundry though who are not. You know, we're in our own network. Who would have been delegates? Mm-hmm. Yeah, at 2024 or 2020, and then thus. Yeah, and there's so much like we could go into the minutiae here on. Even I was listening to someone yesterday, and they were just saying that, and this actually came from someone in an organization called Mainstream UMC, which is a progressive side of the United Methodist Church, and they were complaining that they pre-General Conference, they could not find a database for who are the General Conference delegates.
That's fair.
No, because it's supposed to be made known.
That's what I'm saying.
Like, yeah, and they were complaining it couldn't be found. And so, it was interesting that someone from the more progressive side was even like, hey, we don't even know who all the delegates are. Because what usually happens is, let's say you've been voted to be a delegate at a general conference. Your name's on the list. A year before general conference, one, you're going to get information from your conference, but you're going to start getting information from different organizations like Mainstream or Wesleyan Covenant Association or a lot of other
basically lobby groups.
Correct. And they want to give you information. They want to know if you're interested. They want to know if you want to help their position. Then if you are, they're going to invite you to maybe a regional meeting or another meeting somewhere in the States pre-conference. And none of that is illegal. That's just that's how politics what people work. Do. And so someone from the more progressive side was saying, can't even find a list. Now, there's some, if you were immediately on as a delegate because of your role in like maybe your conference,
mm-hmm.
that would be listed. But as far as like maybe those who were elected.
Yeah.
And then because of the massive exodus that has occurred since 2020.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of those people who were delegates and are no longer
had to be replaced.
They had someone replaced, and this person from Mainstream was saying, we can't find who the replacements are. Like, we don't know, and we would like to know. So I wanted to point that out, that this is not just the traditionalists are saying, hey, this isn't fair. Like, there was complaints kind of from everyone.
And a delegate is a part of the voting body.
Correct.
Of
right.
the general conference. Because right. I guess anyone could go.
No, you have to have credentials to get in.
To get in the room?
Yeah.
But you could watch it.
Yeah, I think you could go to certain, like, you know, outside stuff. But as far as, like, plenary business sessions, no, you have to be credentialed.
Mm-hmm. But delegates are the voting body.
Correct. And delegates are voted upon by their annual conference.
Correct.
Unless they already serve in a certain position in their conference that automatically sends them to. So, don't want to bog this down too much. So, general conference, they met. They're the governing body. They're the ones that are able to vote and change what is the governing documents of the church. So, if anything... here's one thing I personally heard and read while we were in the process of discussing leaving the United Methodist Church back in 2021 and 2022.
Mm-hmm.
And what I heard over repeatedly was, why do you want to go? Nothing's going to change here in South Georgia. Or nothing's going to change. Nothing's going to change at your church. Nothing's going to change. In some way, shape, or form, it was always nothing's going to change.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what you and I are about to look at is how everything has changed. Everything has changed. And this is a new United Methodist Church.
Mm-hmm.
It is not what probably most of us listening would think was the UMC. It is now... fully, completely, a denomination that runs counter to traditional Orthodox Christianity. Now, I'm not saying all the people in the UMC are not Christians. I'm just saying that it runs counter to traditional Orthodox Christianity. Yes, the Book of Discipline and what has been either removed from the language or added to the language at this recent general conference is no longer traditional or Orthodox. And as a result, this is my opinion, Methodism, it's no longer Methodism as it originally was intended to be. It is not John Wesley's Methodism.
It's not.
And quite frankly, it hasn't been since 1968 when the Methodist Church and the United Brethren Church came together.
For the United Methodist
Church. To become the United Methodist Church. So again, if you want to hear more, go to episode 62 and 66. But so I want to highlight some things that happened. These are the big thing. These are the newsworthy, I guess, things that occurred here at United Methodism. Yeah. So first and foremost, and these were all issues that traditional churches and traditional pastors and traditional members of congregations were saying, hey, if this is what is currently going on in United Methodism and it's not being held up, like it's a going against our Book of Discipline.
Mm-hmm.
And things such as the ordination of gay or lesbian persons.
Mm-hmm.
The Book of Discipline previously said that was not the criteria to be an ordained pastor was you could not be gay or lesbian.
Right.
There was a big deal about can you perform same-sex unions in your churches? And the Book of Discipline did not allow for that, but people were doing
it.
That. And so there were all these issues. People were like, hold on. And of course, and so that's happening. It was already happening. And then you were hearing from people like bishops and district superintendents who were like, but nothing's going to change where you are. Okay, so they already
except
didn't mesh.
For churches in the state that
right,
were
right,
be,
right.
being
so
pushed.
Here's what happened at the UMC General Conference. First and foremost, the definition of marriage, according to the United Methodist Church, has now been redefined. It has now been redefined. This is what it says now. Within the church, this is the new one. This is the UMC one. Within the church, we affirm marriage as a sacred, lifelong covenant that brings two people of faith, an adult man and a woman of consenting age. Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the previous one. But then here's the add-on, or two adult persons of consenting age into union with one another. So now there's a distinction between a man and a woman, because it used to say that marriage within the church, we affirm marriage as a sacred lifelong covenant between a man and a woman, period.
I mean, how do you...
And now they throw in a comma, or two adult persons of consenting age into union with one another.
You can't back that up biblically.
Uh-huh.
But that, I mean...
Yes.
And
yes,
I just don't understand how that can be a Book of Discipline thing. Because knowing from leadership that we formerly had, it wasn't like them trying to change the Book of Discipline at these other general conferences. It was just trying to enforce the Book of Discipline. In these other areas.
Yes. There has been lobbyists for changing the language
for years.
And there have been lobbyists to say, no, we're going to keep it. And that's
right.
What happened in the called special conference they had in 2019.
Yeah.
It was upheld.
Mm-hmm.
Everything was upheld. And so now, what happened between 2019 and 2024?
COVID.
Well, yeah, but
and everybody
all
left.
The people that voted and who represented the traditional retired. Orthodox Christianity in 2019 were not there.
Mm-hmm.
Because, newsflash, everything I'm about to read to you was not even debated. It all just
passed.
Yeah. By a majority vote.
But I just don't understand.
No
how
debate, no revotes, no recalls. Passed. All right, so let's. I know you're flabbergasted.
There's no Christianity in that.
Yeah. There's no definition that you can
there's
find.
There's warm feelings about everybody in that, but there's no Christianity in that.
You cannot find the scriptural support for this definition.
And I've looked at the Book of Discipline twice
mm-hmm.
in my life, okay? And it's obviously not this one. It would have the rule and it would have the verses to back it up listed, mm-hmm. wouldn't it?
Yeah, and I'm sure that that whenever they print the new one, it will do the same. They'll find something. I don't know what, but yeah. Who knows? We'll look and see whenever it comes out.
I think we have to.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We'll come back to that whenever they finally do print it. So here's another thing that happened at General Conference. So first of all, they've redefined marriage. Secondly, they have approved.
And which translation they use?
Who knows? They have approved same-sex weddings and marriages in local United Methodist churches. However, so it's approved, mm-hmm. but there does come this caveat where they insist that local congregations don't have to do them, but the option is there. I just see a lot of, in my opinion, that's a lot of let's sue the baker because they don't want to make the cake.
You know that baker's instances. From Hazelhurst?
I know, but I'm not surprised.
The one that's like yeah. the always, stamp is, yeah. is a Hazelhurst baker. Yeah.
Because here's the deal, though. The new language that approves of same-sex weddings and marriages in local United Methodist churches, it identifies what's considered. It also considers, all right, here's what we consider to be discrimination. And it seems that, if a local church were to object to a same-sex wedding union, that it could possibly bring with it a chargeable offense against the pastor of that church or the congregation of that church. Chargeable offense being it goes against the book of discipline, and that church or pastor could be, taken out or, removed or fined or something of that nature.
So it sounds like it'd be at the bishop's discretion if it's allowed or not.
Yeah, there is a judicial council. It would probably make its way to there, so kind of like a Supreme Court, which is interesting because all the things that the traditionalists were fighting for were there's stuff going on in the UMC that, according to our Book of Discipline, are chargeable offenses, but people are not being charged. And that was the whole, deal.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
All right, so redefinition of marriage, same-sex weddings approved in local churches. Another thing that has occurred is that the emphasis has been placed on training at every level of the church in accepting, without argument, without debate, the concept of gender fluidity. So I know he just hit his head.
I almost did it with a mic, but I thought it might be just a little too loud.
Yeah. So. Yes, so that to have an acceptance of that, which goes into the whole discrimination issue of we're going to consider this discrimination if you do not recognize gender fluidity.
That's dumb.
Let me give you an immediate example. At General Conference, so let's say Delegate Joshua Harrell is at General Conference. There's a motion on the floor or there's something to be discussed, and there are microphones all throughout the auditoriums. You go up to microphone one, and you're recognized by the presiding elder of the conference, who would say, okay, microphone one. And you would have to say, excuse me, not have to, but this was very much encouraged, and you can see this on a lot of things on TikTok and YouTube that happened. You would be encouraged to say, my name is Joshua Harrell. I'm from Georgia. I'm a white male. My pronouns are... he, him, y'all. I'm just kidding.
Y'all would be one.
All y'all.
All y'all. All y'all stupid.
And so that was encouraged to do. So just that's an example of the language and the atmosphere that is happening here. I know.
When someone excavates this world in 40,000 years from now and they dig up a body,
yeah,
it's either going to be male or female. And it's not going to be because they decided. It's going to be how they were created.
Mm, you are correct, sir. You are correct, sir.
And I'm tired of hearing any other way than that.
You and are going to be exhausted because if you're just now tired, it's going to keep happening.
But the fact that now it's a debate in the church. I don't care what the world mm-hmm. does.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, one of the things that this was, I don't know how you would, I don't know the terminology for this, so I'm not going to pretend, I'm not going to throw one on and be like, this is what it is. But I do know that one of the agreements or statements, I guess is the better term, made at General Conference toward the end of the conference, I believe, was that they are now, the United Methodist Church is now in full union with the Episcopal Church. Meaning,
I mean, that makes sense.
Meaning a UM pastor could go to an Episcopal church, an Episcopal pastor could go to a United Methodist Church without really much things, which makes sense because the Episcopal Church has already gone through everything we're talking about. Yeah, they could go either way. So we have a redefinition of marriage. We have the approval of same-sex weddings and marriages in local churches. Now there's training for accepting gender fluidity. Now, we've kind of already touched on this, but the former parameters for ordination, the former parameters have now been removed. And so local churches should be open, and this is part of the accepting of the gender fluidity and other things. Local churches should be open to receive gay and lesbian pastors without protest or problems with that appointment. So here's what the language used to be. So this is before General Conference 2024. This is what the traditional Orthodox Christians that were in the UMC, this is what they held up and promoted and what was approved by majority vote in 2019. This is the former language, just to be clear. It used to say this: the practice of homosexuality is incompatible with Christian teaching. Therefore, self-avowed practicing homosexuals are not to be certified as candidates, ordained as ministers, or appointed to serve in the United Methodist Church. They didn't rewrite that, Josh. They completely removed it.
They just took it out.
It's no longer in the board in the Book of Discipline.
So I guess the UMC is now the largest affirming
denomination. Yeah. Oh, without a doubt,
Protestant denomination.
Yes. Yes. Prior to the mass exodus of traditionalists in the last couple of years, we were the United Methodist Church was the fourth largest church.
Yeah.
Protestant church, or no?
Fourth largest church, third yeah. largest, the second or third largest.
Correct.
Protestant.
Yeah. So yeah, definitely the largest affirming
Protestant.
Yeah. So, so that, like I said, that wasn't a rewrite. That was the former language, and it's just been taken out. So it's just no longer a parameter for ordination. So again, what would have been considered a chargeable offense is now off the books. But I mean, there's a bishop who is, according to this language, a self-avowed practicing homosexual.
Which she was a bishop before.
Yeah, she's been a bishop.
Which
so
is
already was going against
the book of discipline.
Mm-hmm.
And now they want to have chargeable offenses, even though they weren't following the Book of Discipline.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So here's another one. Language that used to be in, again, in the parameters for qualifications for ordination has been removed. There was an expectation of clergy to be celibate in singleness and to practice fidelity in marriage. So if you're not married, you're celibate. And if you're married, you're faithful to your spouse.
That's okay. The fidelity in marriage isn't even in there anymore?
They have now, clergy are no longer specifically required to be celibate if single and monogamous in male-female marriage.
Really?
Along with homosexual behavior, these have been removed as chargeable offenses for clergy. Instead, quote, immorality, end quote, is now a chargeable offense, but it is undefined on what that means.
Because you can't define it now.
Correct. What's immoral for you is not immoral for me. That's an absolute. That's a foundational truth. Josh, how could that be something that would be a standard?
Because
what?
Nothing's immoral.
So, just to give a few examples. So, specific bans on adultery and sex before or outside of marriage were in paragraph 2702 in the Book of Discipline. They were removed in committee by a 32 to 13 vote. Thank you for the 13 who tried to uphold it. And in the plenary meeting, so that means, so there's a committee that votes on it to even bring it before the group to vote. In the larger group voting, it passed 474 to 206.
400 people thought it was worth
474. Debating. Don't forget the 74. Yeah. So 206 people, thank you for trying to uphold that.
Golly.
So they, there was a minority report.
That's a good movie.
Yeah, yeah. Not disputing the deletion of homosexual behavior, but asking to retain the language that's chargeable as not being celibate in singleness or not faithful in marriage, and that was rejected. So they wanted to keep the language in it. They're like, all right, let's take out the homosexual thing, so let's be okay with that, but let's be celibate or faithful in marriage. And that was even denied.
See?
So, yeah. So the new traditionalists of the new UMC were trying to be faithful and celibate, and that was denied as well. I'll put it that way.
I mean, there's no God in that.
I wish I do. I don't really. I mean, I don't care one way or the other. But you know, like to do the video of our podcast, this would have been a good one just for everyone to see Josh's face as I'm reading these things.
It's
so
like.
Okay, so I gotta share this one just on the heels of that, because this is like as a nanny nanny boo boo to traditional Orthodox Christians still in the United Methodist Church. No further congregational disaffiliations under paragraph 2553 are allowed in either the United States or internationally.
Because they wouldn't exist if they allowed it.
Mm-hmm, I know. Yeah. So they shut it. It shut down. Yeah. Yeah. And again, I just want to mention this, it's just in my notes, but the real kicker to me is that none of these changes came with opposition on the floor of the general conference session. They all passed. I mean, I don't want to say they didn't come with opposition. They all were
overwhelmingly passed.
The opposition was not in such a way where they had to table it to another time. It went on through, and when a vote was called, it was passed. And passed, I would say, significantly. So, I mean, well over by almost double, it was approved to change language about celibacy and faithfulness in marriage. So,
I know how many churches in town left the UMC.
Mm-hmm.
Do we know how many churches left the UMC nationally?
I know just in front of me. Yes, I think 7,600 churches have disaffiliated, left the UMC.
1,000 of them were in Valdosta.
In the last 4 or 5 years, I want to say. So almost a quarter of the denomination has left. And primarily the southern part of the United States, Midwestern, is where that's come from.
Yeah.
There's a couple of annual conferences where nobody left.
Really?
Mm-hmm. But they were already extremely progressive already. So,
but I mean,
all right. So
you just go.
Well, can I ask the question? I think you're
go for
fumbling
it.
For.
If you can,
is how did this happen? How did these rules change?
Well, actually, I don't want to speak for him, so I'm not going to say his name. But, one of our former leadership said that the fact that they've been debating this since the 70s showed we were doomed to fail.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, the first general conference after the United Methodist Church formed, so I think it was 72,
yeah,
if 72, I remember correctly.
Yeah, that's what he said.
That was when the debate began.
Yeah.
So that just tells
they were fighting it since 72,
yeah.
And eventually...
Yeah. Well, and that's what I want to kind of look at now is because I think the question is fair. Is like, okay, if it's been upheld for traditional Orthodox Christianity all these years, why now? And here's why. Because the loudest voices for traditional Orthodox Christianity had already left the room.
Yep.
They had already left the denomination. Mm. There was no rebuttal because there was no one left in the room to protest.
I would say the quiet voices left the room, and it only left the loud voices.
I said the loudest voices for traditional Orthodox Christianity. But
I would say that the loud voices in the 2019 special
that held it up?
General Conference, mm-hmm. were the voices that were left in General Conference in 2024.
Well, I mean, they were loud enough in 2019 to hold the line.
I mean, there was one guy that was like hogtied with duct tape.
Yeah, I mean, there were some... I mean, I don't know if I'd call those loud voices. I'd call those maybe distractions, but yeah. So here's the thing. The writing, to me and many others, the writing was without a doubt on the wall. You could not deny it when we got news that the 2022 already delayed conference, the one that was delayed from 2020 to happen in 2022, when we got word that it was canceled, the writing was on the wall. Now, we were already into disaffiliation.
Yes.
We made that decision before we knew it wasn't going to happen in 2022. And a lot of people told us that we were knee-jerk reaction, that we were not prayerful, that we were... what was the word that I heard?
Not reactionary, because this would be like
impetuous.
Ooh,
yeah. Yep. It's just like if you are not, we were not so bogged down with UMC that we were able to see, I think.
By the way,
through the forest.
All the churches that those people belong to have since disaffiliated.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've heard from others, but yeah, I mean, even some in town. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Our former church was like, I don't know if you guys should go right now. You know, I'm doing the nice version, but, you know, then they left as well.
Yep.
So, you know, I think, and I'm glad they did. I'm glad that they're not, I'm glad that First Methodist is not, you know, treading water right now in a, I don't know, a muddled pool. So the writing was definitely on the wall. If it wasn't already on the wall for some people when 2022 General Conference was canceled, it most definitely was. It was like a flashing like sign outside your window that you could not close up when bishops started to clamp down on disaffiliations.
Yes.
And
that's one of the fears we had.
Right. And I would say, compared to others in other conferences, we got out easy because of our short history as a standalone church in the UMC. We got out much more cheaply than many of our counterparts in our network, the Foundry, got out. They were in the millions.
Bishop was understanding.
The bishop was understanding at that time. But other conferences, like the conversation never happened. In other places, they allowed a couple and then they shut it down. But I'll tell you this, just to give you an example. This was a quote from Bishop David Graves, who is the bishop for two conferences, the South Georgia Conference and the Alabama-West Florida Conference. He is the bishop whenever we disaffiliated. But this is what he said in 2022. We are seeking to do all we can to allow churches to remain part of the United Methodist Church until after the work of the 2024 General Conference is complete. And that word allow there just kind of goes, you're seeking to allow churches to remain? Because what has happened, I definitely know this is true from the Alabama, West Florida side, is it was more and more difficult to disaffiliate as annual conferences came and went and extensions were allowed. Here's why I think, and this is opinion on my part as to why David Graves would make such a statement. As of this past summer 2023, 50% of churches in the South Georgia Annual Conference had left the United Methodist Church, disaffiliated. And 43% of churches in the Alabama-West Florida Conference had disaffiliated. That is a huge loss to both of those annual conferences. A loss financially. It is most definitely a loss, like, morale-wise. Mm-hmm. I mean, can you imagine the first annual conference after almost half of your churches are gone? I mean, I'm not reveling in that. I would just think that would be really depressing and discouraging. It's gotta be sad. Yeah, discouraging. Yeah, sad's a good word for that. So, now here's a question that I think is worth asking. Are there any traditionalists left in the United Methodist Church? And the answer is yes, there actually are. I know pastors who are traditional and orthodox in their faith, and they uphold it in their preaching, in their teaching, in the way they pastor, and everything. And so that's not like a, I wonder if there's even one. There are. There's know plenty. Some personally. I've gone to seminary with some. I've known them for a long time.
Out of 83,000 ministers,
yeah.
There's going to be some.
Yeah, yeah.
These are numbers, according to the 2024 General Conference, there's 39,000 congregations in the U.S.
Okay, right. So now I do want to correct myself on one thing, because when I said, how is this all allowed to happen? How is this either deletion of previous criteria or the addition or redefinition? How is this allowed? And I said, because the loudest voices for traditional Orthodox Christianity had already left the room. What I should have said is that the loudest white American traditional Orthodox voices had left the room.
Yeah.
Because those seem to be the only voices that are actually allowed to speak in this. And I'm talking about in the 2024 conference.
Mm-hmm.
You think you talk about progressives, and you think it's everybody and all the hues of the rainbow and all the everything. And it's been reported time and time and time again that if they weren't white, at least they were American, and that the African delegation was repeatedly shut down. We don't even have time to go into, but I will briefly say that there are delegates who were voted by their annual conference to attend the general conference in Charlotte, North Carolina, from the continent of Africa, who never received an invitation from the general conference committee. And if you live in another country, in order to obtain a visa to come into the United States, you have to have proof that what you're coming for and the time frame you're coming for. And they never received the invitation. And upon contacting the General Conference Committee, many delegates never even got a return, like not even a response. It is assumed, or I don't know if that's the right word, but what we know of right now is at least 18% of delegates from Africa they were not able to be in Charlotte, North Carolina. They either didn't get an invitation, or they got the invitation so late that there was no way that they were going to be able to go through their countries or the U.S. process to receive a visa.
Mm.
And there is much speculation by people much smarter than me that say that was entirely intentional.
Has to be.
I mean,
the most
you've known about these dates since 2022.
The most conservative part of the denomination that's left, and you just don't invite them.
Right. And yet, and that's your point right there, is why am I mentioning Africa? Is it just because, you know, their skin tone is different than the white folks? No. It's because the African delegation
holds biblical values.
Yeah. They now are the largest portion of the United Methodist Church, especially since all those other denominations have disaffiliated. The African delegation, or the African church, is the largest portion of the UMC now, and it's continuing to grow, but we'll see how that goes after all this. But they have, in effect, been muzzled at previous general conferences, which is why I said what I said about the loudest voices. There have been African delegates in past conferences who have been called down from the stage, from the bishop, from the presiding elder, saying that they were too loud, and they were told to no longer speak. Yeah. So the way the African United Methodists have been treated is atrocious. And this has been done by the progressive side of the denomination.
And there's no way for them, like, there's no way for them to disaffiliate, correct?
There's no way currently. There's no way for them to go. Disaffiliation was never an option for them. So it's just, it's really sad. It's really, that makes me angry.
I would like to see them come take their church if they just did.
Well, and that's the thing, like, of all the stuff we've read, like, I hate the redefinition, but you know what? The Book of Discipline is not the scripture, so put whatever you want to in a Book of Discipline. I don't go by the Book of Discipline. We abide by the scriptures, right? Yeah. So, you know, it bothers, I mean, it's like, what are y'all doing, you know, with the Book of Discipline? But that's your own book, your own thing, like, whatever. But when you start leaving out and mistreating a large, I mean, like, the way they have responded to the delegation has been horrible to me. So, and here's the deal in all this. Like, someone listening to this who is completely, like, 180 from where I am and where you and I are on this could go, well, Shannon, what you just said about how the African delegation is being treated is what we could say is how the gay and lesbian community has been treated, the LGBTQ plus people have been treated. And I go, all right, let's have that conversation. What do you mean by that? Because at no point, let's use the Book of Discipline as the standard, if that's what's so important about changing the wording of. At what point did it say that that gay and lesbian persons were not, have we banned them from coming to church? Have we told them they could not participate in some, I mean, like, have we done that? Is everything perfect? No. How we treat one another, is it perfect? No. But there's never been any language or a promotion of discrimination from our church and from most or all of the traditional Orthodox churches that I know of.
They would say the disallowal of being ordained would be discrimination.
Sure. I mean...
They would.
Okay. Yeah, I get that. But then to go back to your point that you made towards the beginning of this was, where in Scripture can you hold up these new definitions and these new criteria for ordination or removal of criteria? Where, how can you do that scripturally? And I don't see how you can. So that's where the argument lies, is what is your standard by which you're making these decisions?
The Bible is discriminatory against anything that's not of Christ.
Amen. I have said this forever. The words of Jesus, the scriptures, the words of Jesus, and I would even say specifically the red words of Jesus, are the most inclusive message with the most exclusive required response.
1,000%.
It is for everybody.
But it costs you everything.
The exclusiveness of what do you do in order to receive it? What is your response to what has been done for you?
It's for everyone and it costs you everything.
Yeah. So, and that's true for every single person.
Mm-hmm. And it's equal across the board.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
for you, but it costs you everything that you think is important.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
Oh, we mentioned this in our group the other day.
Yeah.
I mentioned that line because we were talking about the rich young ruler.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, we're the rich young ruler.
Yeah.
You know, and he had a bunch of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But God's telling me that I got to give up myself to follow him or my kids because I put them on a pedestal.
Yeah.
You know, like that's the exclusivity of it.
It is.
Whatever the most important thing that you define yourself by, if it's not Jesus, you have to give that up.
Yes. And go with what he calls you to beyond that, beyond the giving up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, yeah,
And I would like, even if I define myself as a, white American heterosexual male.
Mm-hmm.
If I put that above Jesus,
mm-hmm.
I'm to be a Christ follower first.
And isn't that, and whatever other labels you wanted to throw into that besides what you just said,
mm-hmm.
you know, gamer, I mean, you can do a whole lot of things, swimmer, like all this stuff, right? Tech guru, yeah. like
anything that I used to define myself before Jesus.
Right. Or that you would even define yourself today. Like when someone's like, tell me about yourself, Josh, like you'd say these things. But here's the thing, it's like.
Well, I meant like.
Yes.
In lineage.
Yes.
Not, or.
Yeah.
Not before Jesus, but like.
Yeah.
I have above Jesus.
But all of that, that to me is, it's the constant thread storyline from Genesis to Revelation of us battling with our flesh, our sin nature, and the graciousness of God to be redeemed from that.
Mm-hmm.
All of it.
Yep.
Whatever you define yourself by, whoever you think you are, whatever you think you've accomplished, whatever you think you can do better, I mean, all of it. That is the battle. And to me, all these changes that have happened in the new UMC, that's what I'm going to call it from now on, the new UMC is a capitulation to the battle. It's like we're not going to battle anymore. We're not going to battle our flesh versus what God has for us.
Mm-hmm.
There's no more battle in that.
They're consolations to keep people in the doors.
Now here's why. Yeah. Now, besides just being upset about the African delegation, which I would be true if that was any large portion delegation that was treated in such a way. But right,
let's say they did it in Seattle, and they kept everyone from the southeastern part of the United States from coming.
Same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, but here's the reason that. It's very important to mention the African delegation. And that is because for always, except for a couple of African bishops, who I just have to say are probably just drinking the Kool-Aid of the other bishops around the globe. But Africans have opposed efforts to change the traditional Christian stance of marriage between a man and a woman. They have opposed the deletion or removal of language for the parameters of ordination. They have opposed anything that has been a progressive movement to change what they basically agreed to when they themselves became United Methodists. They have pushed against every one of those efforts, every one of them. So enter this, and I don't know, I don't even know how we are, don't mention, but here we go. I'm going to mention this, and we're going to put all this into one episode, I think. Yeah, because I got a letter I want to read at the end from five delegates from the African delegation. It is the best way to end this, but before I read it, here's one more thing that occurred at General Conference. And it's, again, something that the African delegation has opposed. And it is regionalization. Regionalization. Now, here's what I mean by this. I don't know if you remember, Josh, or some of our listeners remember, but at one point, so I don't even remember the long term now, but it was like the, remember the term for the conservative stance for the church is like, oh, if we're going to change things, here's what it's going to be.
It was the traditional.
The reconciliation and grace. Yeah. That document.
Yeah.
Right. Well, mainstream UMC, that's a liberal movement, a progressive movement,
mm-hmm.
And other progressives were like, hey, you know what? Let's do the one church plan. And mm-hmm. one church plan means everyone will do their own thing in their own region, and you can come up with your own governing things, but we're all going to be United Methodists, and we're going to share the same agencies and all the stuff, but we can do what we want here, and you can do what you want there.
That's terrible.
And that's a terrible idea. But for some people, they thought it was a wonderful idea.
Because it keeps money flowing into the pot.
Yes, it does. So here's what regionalization is now going to do, all right? It's going to allow the new UMC in the United States to take all these new changes to the Book of Discipline, they're going to adopt rules based on the discipline, And it's just, it's going to reflect what they want us, the embracing of same-sex marriage. But they're going to tell their African brothers and sisters, you can keep your ban on the acceptance of same-sex relationships. You can keep your ban on that. You can keep your criteria for ordination if you want, which is like, why even vote? Why even vote on the Book of Discipline if you're going to allow regionalization, like for everyone to do their own thing? Now, that was the push, and it is where it's headed. So now here's something to note, and why all of this happened. I think it's the reason it was delayed. I know it's the reason it was delayed in 2022, and why all of this happened in 2024. Because this will be, Josh, the last general conference where the Americans will have the majority vote, and even this time around, it was a slim majority. This was the last general conference where United Methodist Americans had the majority vote. Mm. Africans had more people. And it's like our voting here in the states. You get a number of delegates based on the number of people you have in the denomination.
Right.
I will say right now, though, the number of African delegates is not proportionate to the number of United Methodist Africans. So even this time around, even though many were left out, there should have been more.
Yeah, because of like who they represent, it should have been.
They should have had more delegates, and they didn't. I'm not even saying they didn't come. Like, they should have had more delegates to begin with,
uh-huh.
And then the ones they did have, many were not allowed. I
thought 70 was kind of low.
Yeah, I mean, like, super low.
Yeah.
Super low. They did not recalculate
the delegates
between from 2020 to 2024. They did it on purpose.
Well, yeah.
So,
because I've heard from more than one person that Africa is the reason this stuff hasn't gone through already.
Yeah, they were a big part of that in 2019.
Yeah.
So for U.S. progressives, what happened 2 weeks ago, or over 2 weeks, was urgent, because it is the last general conference where they will outnumber United Methodists from other countries just based on their. I mean, they already were outnumbered, but again, they were going on their old numbers, right?
Yeah.
In 2000, this is in the year 2000, the international delegates made up about 16% of voting delegates. This go around, they made up 44% of international delegates, most of those African Methodists, and that was not equitable, as I said, for them this time around. It didn't match up. So, since so many churches have left the U.S., the denomination through disaffiliation, the decline has happened here, and it's going to reflect in the size of delegates for U.S. In 2028. So they're going to be the minority for sure. Many of us have left. We're gone. I'm so glad. I mean, even going through this, I just get that old, like that frustration. You know, we had a foundry get together a couple weeks ago in Alabama, and we just all were like, goodness, we're so glad we're not going to be part of the melee. But we were also heartbroken by it in many ways. About a quarter of the churches have left. And here's what I want to do. I want to wrap up. I think a good way to wrap up is to conclude with, this was immediately after General Conference 2024, after it concluded. Five delegates representing five annual conferences from Africa stood on the front steps of the convention center because they were not allowed to speak or read this on the General Conference floor. And I want to read this letter from African delegates. Here is what African delegates want the United Methodist Church, the people of Africa, and the rest of the world to know. We speak as Africans, representing the majority of African delegates, and we believe the vast majority of United Methodists in the 35 annual conferences in Africa. We have loved the United Methodist Church, but now our hearts are troubled. The General Conference of the United Methodist Church has changed the United Methodist definition of marriage, not because the Bible has changed, but because Western culture has changed. At this conference, the United Methodist Church has chosen to follow what pleases man instead of what pleases God. Many African delegates are not here. They desired to be present and had planned to attend, but they were not invited by the Commission on General Conference in time to receive their visas. Over 70 of us from Africa are not present. That is roughly 25% of our delegates. 10 months ago, we began sending letters and emails and making phone calls alerting the Commission on General Conference and some of our bishops that there was a problem. Many of these communications never received a single response. It felt as if we were not valued or wanted. One mainstream UMC leader wrote that the United Methodist Church should be willing to lose Africa to fulfill its progressive agenda. It is hard for us to believe we are valued as true brothers and sisters within the United Methodist Church. It is difficult to trust that we are seen as equal partners. The United Methodist Church now defines marriage differently from what God created it to be in the beginning in Genesis 2, verses 18 and verse 23 through 25. It has changed the definition of marriage from how Jesus described it in Matthew 19 as one man and one woman. In Africa, we do not believe we know better than Jesus.
Ha!
We do not believe we know better than God. We do not believe we know better than the Bible. We must now return to Africa and tell our people that the General Conference did not listen to us, does not value us as partners, and is willing to lose us to pursue its liberal Western agenda. A bishop stated that if we cannot get on the UMC train and embrace its destination, we should leave. But what do we do when the train has run over us and left our hearts bleeding with sorrow and pain? We want the UMC to hear. We do not accept a change in the definition of marriage, and we will never accept marriage as anything other than one man and one woman, no matter what the Book of Discipline says. We return to Africa with important decisions to make regarding the future. I'll close with this final statement. There's slim hope for change in the United Methodist Church in 2028, but we will see. Ooh, so whoever was crazy enough to ask, so what happened to General Conference?
There
now
you
know from our perspective and from the delegates from the nation or the continent of Africa. So long episode today, but a lot of info.
Yep.
Josh, I appreciate you.
Appreciate you.
Anything you want to mention before we go?
Just Rise Against Hunger this coming Wednesday.
Yeah. Wednesday, May 15th from 6 to 7:30.
Yep.
We're going to meet in the auditorium. Going to pack 10,000 bags of food.
A lot of food.
All over the globe. And it's going to be awesome time. We have quite a few people signed up. We need you to register. Go to events.
Let us know you're coming.
PorchCC.com. Registrations.
Events.
PorchCC.com. Whatever it is. Yeah. Events. And let us know. All right. Thanks, guys. We'll talk to you soon and we'll see you Sunday.
See you. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to the 167 podcast. Join us next time for more insights to inspire, challenge, and encourage you to help you live into the remaining 167 hours of your week.